7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2.
Okay, I'm doing a study on race relations and what happened in the 20th century. And I want to get back to what you had done during the experience with the SCLC and the Congressman. The image of Atlanta has always seemed to be a city with a long tradition of compromised population, climate change between black and white leaders. I was curious why, what this is why the SCLC and other civil rights organizations put their headquarters here.
I think the civil rights movement in a real sense was born here with Martin Luther King and Whitney Young, taught at Atlanta University, who went on to the Urban League, Vernon Jordan, who followed him, who's from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Walter White, the longtime president of the NAACP, was from Atlanta. W.E.B. Du Bois was, based in Atlanta for long periods of time. So Atlanta just seemed to be the natural place for the movement headquarters. And it was really brought here largely because Martin still pastored. He was called to be the assistant pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church with his father.
In terms of people's background, yeah. Did the spirit of cooperation in Atlanta in any way encourage Dr. King or yourself in the King and Nonviolent approach? And by that I mean, the fact that nonviolence seemed to be working here very slowly, there had been...
Well, you see, it didn't... Georgia was really one of the more violent states in the world. And when I left college in 51, I was scared to death of Georgia. I wouldn't even stop in Georgia. And Georgia didn't have a tradition of compromise and conciliation. That didn't come until the 1960s,
almost.
Atlanta itself, well, I guess there was a pretty good relationship, but when I came here, for instance, in high school to a YMCA conference, the Klan paraded down Hunter Street, and I didn't think of this, even Atlanta, as a place that was particularly moderate compared to New Orleans, where I grew up. But the difference was in the 60s. And I think the difference really came around Ivan Allen and Woodruff supported it, but the president of Coca-Cola was there. Or Paul Austin. Yeah. And one of my theories, which you can play with if you want to. Paul Austin came here from South Africa. He'd been in South Africa for 14 years. He had been struggling with the race question. He was in South Africa when apartheid was born, when the Dutch, the Afrikaners took over from the British. He saw a society deteriorating under racial segregation. And when he came to Atlanta, he and I would say as much as any single person and the Coca-Cola company just couldn't afford to be in a town with bad race relations.
So it was from a business perspective.
But it was an enlightened self-interest, but that I think in Ivan Allen and others was also had a sound moral base in their personal life.
I was just thinking in terms of that because blacks, when they began to vote in white primaries or have in white primaries, did begin to get a few crumbs by the police and things like that. But maybe there was
almost a 6-month boycott here in 1960 of downtown. So just over the desegregation of lunchtime is at Rich's. It took a while to... Martin basically came... started the nonviolent movement actively in 55. In 55, I don't know that Atlanta would have been considered particularly, we didn't think of it as particularly moderate or enlightened.
Okay. Well, I've spoken to some of the older leaders, Reverend bought it and feel that
yeah.
they sort of bought it once at that particular
yeah.
time. But I guess
no, well, we
it's relative really.
Yeah, sure. And it wasn't Mississippi.
Early 1960s, after the school desegregation and lunch counts with desegregation, an agreement was negotiated regarding that. And Dr. King had said, his word, I am optimistic when I face it on the planter itself. Here we have all the forces on both sides, but the forces of defiance are not as strong as those who realize it is futile to stand on the beaches of history and try to hold back the tide. That was what gave me that sense that maybe what Atlanta was in some way different from either.
Well, I guess you have to say that, in the sense that already by that time, Dr. Benjamin Mays had a pretty good relationship with a lot of the business community, that Grace Hamilton, his involvement as Secretary of the Urban League, had involved a number of the whites in the business community. And Hartsfield was probably a moderate, the liberal mayor for his time.
I was also curious why Dr. King, why the SCLC never really undertook a campaign.
Well, two reasons. One, it was home,
yeah.
and we needed some place to come back to. The other thing was that in every place we took on a campaign, we had to take on the black establishment too. In Birmingham, the black establishment worked against us constantly, most of them. They were afraid.
You were a newcomer?
Yeah. And we were upsetting the apple cart. And they, I mean, when Martin was bonded out of jail by a black undertaker and urged to call off the movement and leave town, the majority of the black churches took a position opposing the movement. And asking us not to do it.
This is in Birmingham,
sir. And we would have had some of that in Atlanta, but it would have been against his own family.
I heard there was some sort of agreement for Dr. King to stay out of city affairs here, that he could locate his national headquarters here, but he...
I mean, it was something that he decided. I don't think he made any agreement with him. Because, for instance, when Marriott opened up and when Ford opened up, we didn't hesitate to move in on them on about employment.
Mm-hmm.
But they responded, and there was no need for a movement.
But the older black leadership then did not particularly welcome Dr. King into city affairs, or at least what they were doing here.
I don't know. I mean...
The feeling I always got was that a lot of the older leaders, King Sr. and a lot of the other ones, felt that they were working along very slowly, they were getting things done slowly, they had sort of a working relationship with the white community here, and wouldn't want anybody to really come in and move things too fast.
I think that it was more the fact that when we came back to Atlanta, we didn't want to be bothered. We also characteristically took places that were tough, that were not moving on their own.
Atlanta
was moving in its own way.
What was the reaction of the other black leadership to the dismayment of student citizens? Did they have any particular hostility put there?
Well, some of them did. Yeah. And, for instance, the newspaper never supported the movement, the black newspaper. They were world.
Of course, he didn't support me for Congress.
I'm supposed to see that stuff. There's a large conservative black population here.
So they really wanted to slow it down for Twitter.
Well, they were doing all right.
They thought they were
doing
all right. The relationship between the SCLC and the city government, was there any spirit of cooperation contained there? You have much relationship with
we supported Ivan Allen in his campaign. Quietly, we didn't endorse him, but we got out the vote. But we never bothered him. I mean, we just left that alone.
Did you have any contact at all with the Lincolnville Voters League?
Yeah, we financed it. We did fine. I mean, we raised money for it. And we put the money that came to us, the voter registration from various foundations, we put through the voters. So Jesse Hill was chairman of the All Citizens Registration Committee. And I was in the citizenship school end of it, and operating our Field Foundation grant, and I trained most of the voter registration workers for voters.
So there was some contact then on what was happening in the city. Okay. How about, did the movement here operate differently than it did in the city? Less confrontation, more, was there, I guess
we had a better, we had a good relationship with the police. I mean, Daddy King and Chief Jenkins were personal friends. See? And so, normally where you have hostility from the police, Daddy King would pick up the phone and talk to Chief Jenkins. And when people decided to demonstrate, instead of being attacked, demonstrations by the police, demonstrations were protected by the police.
And what are the basis of that relationship? And Jenkins himself said that he would face the segregationists at first. And he said, what?
I don't know. They just, it was just a personal relationship that, you know, that I found here.
So in other words, you didn't really have to engage in the type of things you would have to build partner with everything.
And see, even in Selma, I had a very good relationship with Wilson Baker. It was Jim Clark, the sheriff, that we had the confrontations with. And anybody who would talk and be reasonable and discuss issues, even when they differed, we dealt with them different than with somebody who was going to throw you in jail just to come down. When you come down to talk about voter registration, you'd get beat up by Jim Clark.
That's what I mean. That's why I thought Atlanta was a little different.
Yeah, it was.
At least since Hossville's day, mm-hmm. He was basically a segregationist too.
And there were black voters. That made a big difference. The mayor got elected. I don't think Ivan Allen ever got the majority. Well, in his first term, I don't think he got the majority of the white vote. It was the coalition of the black vote and the business community that moved in bold.
And so to it,
yeah.
So basically then, the voting power is really what created
what made
sort of a sense of cooperation. I don't see any of this back in the 30s or 20s. And, your election in 1972 in Congress, first of all, how well was the election received by the whites?
Fairly well. It really was. I mean, I beat a very good white Republican, the best of the white Republicans, in fact. And nobody expected me to beat him, and I wouldn't have beaten him without... I guess I got close to 20% of the white vote.
And what did you see the basis for that, given that turnout?
I don't know. I think that, that was a time after Martin Luther King's death, and the whole country was aware of the polarization that was occurring, and I think that there were enlightened white people who saw my election as one way of avoiding the polarization in Atlanta. That they would rather participate in the election of a black candidate that they could maintain a relationship with than to have a black candidate forced on them later on in a polarized environment.
But you weren't getting this in other cities. I mean, in a sense, then you're saying there was more of a liking to the way I did here. Was it basically the, North Side whites?
It was a combination of the kind of enlightened business community and the new neighborhood movement.
Mm-hmm.
I helped to stop that presidential parkway. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was 485 in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And so I picked up a lot of votes over there as an advocate of neighborhood issues and protecting neighborhoods against expressways.
Okay, what changed for the black community? How did you the black community? You were the first black congressman.
The biggest change came when a black congressman that was able to help a Georgian get elected president. Now, there were other things. I formed a mass transit committee. There was no mass transit committee in Congress at all.
Mm-hmm.
And because of MARTA, I went on the banking committee and got the congressman from Washington, Boston, San Francisco, were in Atlanta, and Ed Koch from New York. And we went to the chairman and formed a committee on mass transportation. And we got the first mass transit bill passed that has brought over close to $2 billion into the city. When we got ready to build the airport, we were able to get the highway moved. I got a federal building. I didn't do it alone, but the highway stuff and the airport I did pretty much alone. I mean, it was a one-on-one relationship with the Secretary of Transportation.
So in other words, you were able to, I guess, represent the city's interests a little differently than somebody else. In what sense would be?
In the sense that I was a national black leader of sorts. I had the power to get all the congressmen elected. There are about 188 districts where the difference between winning and losing is dependent on the black turnout. Well, a 40% black turnout, and the Democrat loses. A 50 to 60% black turnout, and the Democrat wins. So I did a lot of campaigning across the country.
How about the black community in the congressional campaign? Other than a psychological aspect of that, there's a black man who becomes congressman.
Well, we got more blacks into the military academies than any other district. You really don't represent blacks in Congress. There was no vote that was a black vote.
I understand that.
But for instance, in a Georgia vote, the peanut subsidies and things like that, I was able to deliver big city votes, to put together a team of rural votes. Mm-hmm. And in return, I got a lot of rural voters to vote with me on the minimum wage for domestic workers. So getting the minimum wage for them applied to domestic workers, mm-hmm, really was a direct dollar and cents payoff to the domestic workers that I had campaigned for.
Mm-hmm. How about in terms of Maynard Jackson being elected mayor in 1973? Here we go from the South, Ivan Allen, the South, Jackson. What did it mean for Atlanta? What did it mean for the black community because of having a black man?
It meant basically implementation of the Affirmative Action. Blacks were getting less than 1% of the city contracts,
even under the South.
They just started getting 1% of them. So by the time, it may have been, Macell was aware of the problem, and Macell made the agreement that blacks should get 20% of the contracts on the MARTA. Macell and Jesse Hill. And that was the formula that got MARTA passed. But Maynard pressed that to every city contract.
Airports, whatever.
And he got it up to about 20% citywide.
In other words, even with Allen, and particularly myself, who was elected with a great deal of black votes, there wasn't that type of response that would have come from a black mayor.
It was a new issue. And it took, I think, a black mayor to understand the importance of that issue. I think that's the most significant thing about the city right now, and that one of the reasons for good racial relations is that blacks at every level share in the benefits of the political system. The black middle class got 20% of the contracts, but the black poor who ride the buses got a bus fare lowered to 15 cents.
And that was part of the original deal.
Part of the original deal. Every deal that we put together was put together so that everybody shared in the blessing of it.
Well, Maynard Jackson was criticized quite often in the very early period of being generated by the white administration. What is the basis of that?
I think the basis for that really was Maynard's style. And Maynard comes from one of the old line black aristocracies. I mean, in Maynard's family, they sit down at dinner and recite poetry. They don't say verse. You know, I mean, it was, and they put classical music on. And, I mean, it's just a very formal family. He wouldn't come to dinner without a shirt and tie.
Mm-hmm.
But, and that was his background. And Weiss resented that. I mean, because he was, he had thought of himself as much of an aristocrat as they thought of themselves. I mean, he is.
He was.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, his grandfather thought, and he was a leading shaker back then.
And so it was, and the other thing I think was that Maynard, because he was younger, had not been active in the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a need to do things in a way that proved to blacks that he was doing something. So he had to play to the black community in a way that I don't feel I have to.
Well, you know, he's a pioneer in a sense. He came first, I guess he had. What type of things do you think he did in terms?
It's just the way he did it.
But, you mean if he snubbed his nose to the right business structure?
Well, I mean, he would announce at a press conference, we're not going to build this airport unless black contractors get 25%. And he held it up for you.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to him and meet with him in private and sit down and have an understanding of why we needed to do it,
mm-hmm.
get the agreement on it, and then we'd sit down together and announce it. And it was just a matter of style.
Okay, but other than joint ventures and already hiring, was there anything done real in terms of the Black Corps, housing, the project support, things like that? Did he really move on that?
He did. In terms of the community development money, almost all of the community development money under the Jackson administration went into poor neighborhoods. These neighborhood facilities, the comprehensive just every neighborhood has a good neighborhood center.
Mm-hmm.
He built up, he used the money in those neighborhoods. He put, I guess we still do, almost 30% of our community development money has consistently gone into renovating housing for poor people. Programs that, for instance, free weatherization. We would do $1,500 worth of free weatherization for senior citizens. That was basically what we did with the community development.
That was not being done before, was it?
No. Well, there was no community development.
Okay, but before, I'd say even things like talk money. My impression before was that if there was any money to spend on talks, it was spent on the white areas.
Yeah, and there wasn't much to spend because, see, the deal with the stadium used up all the park money.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until the Braves started winning that we started getting some park improvement funds. Okay. So Maynard took the community development money and put it into parks.
I came across a statement that Leroy Johnson made one time. He said that prior to the 1970s, blacks were being planned for, and now they're being planned with. Do you think it's pretty much a good statement of what the guys would have to do?
Well, I think it started in the 60s. And it started with, Paul Alston and Bill Calloway and John Portman formed the Atlanta Action Corps. And that's another, I think if there is a single key to good race relations in Atlanta, that's the Action Corps. It started out with the bankers and Portman and Paul Alston. And it wasn't Dave Garrett, but Tom Beebe of Delta Airlines. There were about 10 other big dog white folks that got together with Herman Russell and Jesse Hill and Bill Calloway and the big blacks in the business world and the black community and the big power structure white folk started meeting one Saturday a month.
Yeah.
It started in the 60s, early 60s, 61, 62. And they still meet once a month.
And what's the motivation for that? The
motivation is communication.
For economic, for the image of the city, for
everything. I mean, it was a trade-off. The whites were interested in maintaining good race relations.
Mm-hmm.
the blacks were interested in sharing power and money. And so the meeting breaks down into what should we be doing for each other.
You're not getting that in other cities, though. That's what I come back to.
You don't get that in a single city in the world, to my knowledge.
And that's why I should have come back to that.
You ought to talk to Bill Calloway. He's in Portland, Douglas. He's 75-ish, and he knows all of the background of the Action Forum.
What?
Right. Yeah. And Mike Trotter now serves as sort of a secretary for the Action Forum.
But basically then, in terms of what's happening in Atlanta, this is what I get back to when I go back to the 1940s, when the Atlanta Negro Voters League was organized back in the 40s.
Hello?
Yeah.
What's up?
I guess I seem to be getting back to more and more that at least beginning with the Atlanta Negro Voters League and the fact that they had some voting power, that the whites seem to be more willing to cooperate here on a slow basis. They're going to call the shots. But
there was always more, for one, there was always an educated black community that was sort of financially secure.
Basically, that made a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, there was an established black middle class. See, the black bank is at least 80 years old. It was back when I was in Congress that they celebrated their 75th anniversary. So the colleges are over 100 years old. And that's just a big difference.
In terms of what? In terms of
how? Well, in terms of, for instance, in most communities, blacks move into slums as whites move out. In Atlanta, you had a black bank and a black insurance company that loaned money to black real estate developers, and they built the black suburbs from scratch.
Okay, so they weren't dependent on the whites, or at least the black banks were able to show the white bankers that blacks were good mortgages.
Yeah. And for instance, I worked in New York in 1957, and I was on the staff of the National Council of Churches, and the Council of Churches was willing to guarantee a mortgage. And it took me about 3.5 months to get a mortgage in New York. And then the executive from the National Council, who was a white preacher from North Carolina, had to come out with me and cuss the folk out for me to get a mortgage. I moved to Atlanta in 1961, and I went, found a house, and in literally 3 days I had signed the papers and had a mortgage. And so the whole climate of business relationships was different.
Do you think it was also partly because the whites had comparable blacks to talk to, big businessmen, very educated people? They didn't have that in the city, I guess. So.
Well, it was there, but they had no relationship. I mean, still, if you go to a cancer society benefit or something like that in Atlanta, it's integrated. You go in New York and there'll be nobody black there. We've sort of worked. If at an NAACP dinner, it's about 30-40% white. At an American Jewish Committee dinner, it's 20-30% black. I mean, people work at race relations in Atlanta. They really do.
And that gets back to my feeling that the city was a little different than it was. Just two other things.
Ironically, in my election, I imagine I got 90% of the Jewish vote. On the basis of a statement which really recognized the PLO and called for a Palestinian state, and everything that was, in fact, Stu Eisenstadt and Ron Cohen of American Jewish Congress helped me prepare it. Say, but my position is even more conservative than that now. On the Middle East, but it's still not, it's not good enough. Though in 1972, I got total support of the Jewish community based on that. I mean, they thought it was such a good statement, they paid to have it mailed to all of the voters in the city, in the Jewish voters in Missouri.
Look, what I've gathered, the Jewish community here has always been pretty supportive of black candidates anyway.
Well, also, you have to remember the synagogue was bombed or something in the late 50s.
The Rabbi Rothschild was very active in the branch also.
And his mother-in-law worked in my campaign.
I don't know what Richard Rich's attitude was. He seemed to be the one who kept his bumper store, or at least his restaurant, very segregated.
It was segregated as a matter of tradition, but he also was one of the leaders in the negotiations to desegregate all of them.
So he really was interested in moving in that direction. I guess he was afraid of losing business if he didn't do that.
He couldn't move by himself.
Yeah. Just two other things. I was curious in terms of just another issue I'm working on. City government efforts today to reach out to growing Hispanic community. Is there anything being done to
well, I was chairman of the Community Relations Commission when the first Hispanic group came up in 1970. And we immediately translated driver's license applications. All of the city documents were translated into Spanish. And now we've had an aggressive hiring policy to hire Hispanic policemen, to hire Hispanics in positions to see that Hispanics get a fair share of the contract.
And it's part of it's more than political. I mean, you want to go into the mainstream.
Most of them can't vote. I mean, it's that you don't want anybody to get alienated.
Mm-hmm.
And the Asian community is even less political. But we've been trying, and I've been pressuring the chief to go ahead and find some Asian police officers. Because you don't want any group of people to come in and be separate.
Okay, so in a sense, Grant, I guess what you should be thought of as sort of a black-white city is really taking a more multi-ethnic.
We have about, I guess the Asian community is about, well, there are 3,000 Indian families. There are about 20 to 25,000 Koreans. Maybe 10,000 Vietnamese, 10,000 Chinese. We've probably got a couple of 100,000 Asians in the metropolitan area. And about 150,000 Hispanics. 70,000.
But there is a definite effort to reach out.
Yeah.
Bring them in. Community Relations Commission, how effective is that? I know before you said it, you were chair, but...
I was chair during the time that the labor civil rights movement got together.
Yeah.
And so most of the problems I had to deal with were big strikes. We had three big strikes. Scripco, Sears, and Mead Packing House. Where each one of them was several thousand workers walking off the job. And so I got a reputation, that's where I got the reputation as a negotiator. Because I knew all of the folk in the labor movement and the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. And I could get folk in a room and just wouldn't let them out until they came to some agreement.
How about things like questions about who hiring a black police department and firing?
We had moved past that by the time I was on.
Housing problems? Okay.
We didn't have any housing problems. What we did, we had neighborhood hearings once a month in a different neighborhood. And whatever the people wanted us to do, I mean, we saw ourselves as an agency for helping city government to respond to neighborhood needs.
And this was under the Sullivan Street. I guess the idea here was to keep the lines open.
Yeah.
You know, between that communication. So in a sense, I guess it was on a neighborhood basis, it was sort of like the Action Forum, except it was for regular citizens, I suppose.
And mostly the poor. But we'd never had much in the way of, we never had any real riots.
That's fine. That's a lot of what I wanted to know. The only other thing, I've been trying to get Maynard Jackson for an interview, and he has so far refused. Do you have any any tools with him at all?
I don't know. I can tell him